Honeywell UOP technology is helping the world reduce greenhouse gas emissions and adopt renewable energy. With solutions for blue and green hydrogen, carbon capture, and renewable fuels, they're equipping energy producers, manufacturers, commercial transportation providers, and other heavy industries with the tools they need to deliver on their sustainability commitments. Honeywell UOP, leading the energy transition the world needs. Learn more at uop.honeywell.com.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, episode 198, Raya and the Last Dragon, brought to you by Water and Trust. Welcome to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, the number one place to get your animation fix with animation addicts just like you. Each episode, we dive into the wonderful world of animation featuring Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, and everything in between. From hilarious discussions and movie reviews to interviews with industry insiders, this show's mission is to brighten your day through our love of animation. So hop on your nerdy couch, grab some snacks, and get ready to hang out with your animation besties because it's time to dive into today's episode.
Welcome to the Animation Addicts Podcast. We're your hosts. I'm Morgan Stradling.
And I am Chelsea Robson.
And we're back. But we're not doing Woo-hoo. We're back.
No,
not
we're not.
The movie. That's
We've
not
done
the
that.
Movie today. We've done that one. It's a good one. Go check it out. But we are back. We are officially back for season 9 of the Animation Addicts Podcast. I cannot believe we are on our 9th season of doing the podcast.
I mean, yeah, that's pretty amazing. No, like, I have a niece who's turning 8 years old, and that's just crazy to me. Because she was born after we started.
Yeah.
We had already started this, and the whole thing just makes me feel really old, but also very mature, you know? Just like, look how seasoned we are. It's amazing.
Yes, old is a state of mind, Chelsea. So you are not old unless you actually, you know, want to think that you're old. So definitely not old. This is a podcast for animation addicts. If you are a millennial, basically like millennials with a little bit of Gen Z in there. But if you grew up in the 90s, in the 80s, watching animated classics where those were your jam, the VHS, if you know what a VHS is, then yeah, this is for you. This is the podcast for you. And we are excited to be back. So this episode, we are going to be reviewing a good one. We are going back to our roots with Disney animation, Raya and the Last Dragon.
Gravity had a good run, but it's time to feel the weightlessness of the Brooks Glycerin 21. These running shoes feature nitrogen-infused DNA Loft V3 cushioning. Brooks has even magnified the plushness to elevate the softness to new levels. And if you want extra support, find these same features in the Brooks Glycerin GTS 21. Learn more and shop now at brooksrunning.com. That's brooksrunning.com.
Honeywell UOP technology is helping the world reduce greenhouse gas emissions and adopt renewable energy. With solutions for blue and green hydrogen, carbon capture, and renewable fuels, they're equipping energy producers, manufacturers, commercial transportation providers, and other heavy industries with the tools they need to deliver on their sustainability commitments. Honeywell UOP, leading the energy transition the world needs. Learn more at uop.honeywell.com.
Better.
are two friends who have a passion for animation. We used to have three of us on the podcast. The amazing Mason Smith was one of our co-hosts for many, many years. He did join us last year for a few episodes, but now it's just Chelsea and I, and we may have special guests here and there, but today is just a Morgan Chelsea episode. So speaking with season 9, I want to do some housekeeping and some format changes to the podcast. So typically, for all of this time that we've been podcasting, we release our episodes every 2 weeks. And obviously, we've wanted to get the show to be a weekly podcast. That is where it's at. I know that I eat up podcasts. That's all I'm listening to. And even the shows that are once a week sometimes aren't enough for me. And so we heard you. We know that you guys want to have the show once a week. So because of the patrons of the show, we are now excited to announce that the show will be once a week. We are so, so pumped. And the way that it will be structured is that we are going to still have our review episodes where we review a movie, whether it's past or present. And then the next week is going to be our nerdy couch discussion episodes. So in the past, these would be kind of like a mini segment within the main episode. But we thought it'd be fun to expand those out to give you guys more content.
Sometimes they relate to the episodes and sometimes not. And sometimes we're just like, hey, did you see that?
Yes.
Let's talk about that. So yeah, we're just like kind of going to kind of go more like shooting by the hip on those episodes of just like kind of what you guys are talking to us about and what we are seeing around us and just trends and just times when Morgan and I just want to like shoot the breeze. We're going to bring you in on those moments.
Yes.
It'll be great.
Yes.
Our friendship is completely public.
Patrons do have the opportunity to submit questions for the Nerdy Couch discussion. So if you are a patron, there is a place where you can submit as many questions as you want. And we may choose to do that. And then our diamond level patrons do have the opportunity to join us for those Nerdy Couch discussion episodes to discuss a topic of their choice, which is pretty cool. So again, thank you, patrons. And I'm just so pumped to not only be back, but to be back in this weekly fashion. Now, if you are new to the show or you've been listening for a long time, you should definitely consider becoming a patron. Go to rotoscopers.com/patron because if we still have our goal of doing even more shows, and once we hit a certain patron level, then we can bring you, instead of just once a week, doing it twice a week. So we hope that you guys like this format change. It will give us more opportunity to discuss the movie, and then we won't feel so rushed when we're doing our Nerdy Couch discussion episode. So just to tease what the next Nerdy Couch discussion episode will be on after this episode, we're going to be discussing the change in the movie industry since COVID, specifically with Disney and their premiere access of their films. Raya and the Last Dragon was released both in theaters and as a premiere access, but I'm getting ahead of myself. Stay tuned to next week where we will dive into that more and the implications for the movie industry as a whole and for Disney and for consumers. I'm excited to dive into it. So without further ado, let's jump into the main event, Raya and the Last Dragon. As always, before we get started, let's set the stage. Set the scene for Raya and the Last Dragon. This movie was directed by Don Hall, Carlos Lopez Estrada, as well as co-directors Paul Briggs and John Ripa. It was released in the United States on March 5th, 2021. It had a budget of $100+ million. So it could be $100 million. It could be $200 million. That plus is everything, right? That holds the answer.
Plus.
And box office to date has done $97.2 million, which, if this were a year ago, absolutely would be considered a flop. But because of the COVID pandemic and everything that's happened, movies are slowly rolling back into theaters. And as a result, they're not entirely going back to theaters. They are also going on all of these different platforms that are owned by the studio themselves. So we're going to dive into that in our Nerdy Couch discussion next week. But it is sad to me to see how the box office is just not as stellar as what we're used to. This definitely would be considered a bomb under last year's numbers and beyond. But what do you think, Chelsea?
Oh, for sure. This would be like a, that hurts. But I do believe that with the streaming markets and everything, I think they'll be able to make it back their way. Yeah. I mean, everything is really moving over to that membership level. So as opposed to like wherever they're going to make it back, they end up, it all comes out in the wash, I guess. Yeah,
they're cutting out the middlemen. So, you know, the big days of Blockbusters as we know it might be coming to an end, you know, especially since so much is going behind that paywall. I'm curious, let us know in the comments of this episode, rotoscopers.com/198. Did you watch this movie on streaming through Premier Access, which I believe is $30 to watch it, to rent it?
Yeah.
And that's on top of your Disney Plus membership? Or did you go see it in theaters? I feel for me, I was just so excited to get back out into the theaters and I wanted to support my local theater. It's just been really sad to see how that industry has really had a hard time this past year. So I was more than happy to purchase my ticket and to take all of my kids to the theater so we could watch it. And I really enjoyed the experience of watching in a theater. It, yes, you can enjoy, you know, with your great TV and sound system, but it doesn't really compare to in a theater.
Yeah, I do enjoy in theater moments. I ended up watching this via the streaming. I happened to be staying with my brother and his family. They've got four kids. And I was, I honestly did not say or suggest that we should watch anything. They were like, oh, let's all watch a family movie. Oh, we can watch this. And then they debated about the price. And like, and then my brother's like, well, it would probably be more if we ended up going to the theater. Uh-huh. So we might as well just do it. You know, this is a family discussion, and that's what it ends up being. So they ended up, you know, renting it, and I was interested to see somebody that's not myself. It's just like a normal family, the normal people, as opposed, yeah. Yeah, you know, it's just as far as like I am not having been at screenings and not having to. Like as a press member, I haven't had to pay for a movie in a really long time. So yeah, it's been, it's interesting to see what people end up paying for. So yeah,
it's actually really interesting because for bigger families, you know, it's kind of expensive to go to the theaters. You have to, you know, pay for the prices, which have been going up over the years. And then there's the inevitable popcorn and maybe snacks that may come with that. And, you know, getting everybody out of the house is maybe a hassle for some people. And it's so much easier, you know, especially the more kids you have, the better this is a better deal as each child you add. You just get to sit and watch the movie and you don't have to go anywhere. So very, very interesting. We'll be talking more about this on our Nerdy Couch Discussion episode next week. So stay tuned. But let's talk about this movie, Raya and the Last Dragon. You know, it's so funny. You know, even though I'm in the animation industry and we have the website with that covers all of the news, even in the back of my head, I always thought this was not Disney. Like, I kind of thought it was Pixar for a time, even though it doesn't really feel like a Pixar film. But at the same time, it doesn't really feel like a Disney film to me when I was watching it. Did you feel that way as you were watching it?
I feel like the character design is like the shapes of heads and everything, like not necessarily the head, but like the shape of the mold kind of feels like it comes through. Like all the princesses have
big eyes,
certain things that kind of,
they're the same species. Okay. We know the princess species.
Yes. It's so true. No matter what color, the skin, eyes, you know, hair, whatever it is, there's going to be certain determining factors of the Disney princess.
Right.
And Raya fits right in there with those big gushing eyes that make you look at him like, aw. So I did see that as kind of a Disney thing, but I also didn't. I mean, it's been so weird over the last years because so many of the animation studios have been like the animators go from studio to studio. And so they all become a little bit of a mesh between each other just because those designers end up at the same places. At least that's what I've heard people say. And so I can kind of see that in the character designs in a lot of this different studios. Now, that's not to say that they're all like that, because you look at somebody like Illumination and their character designs are very different. And some of the you know, Blue Sky had its moment. Oh, Blue Sky. Yeah, so I feel like there's a lot of interchangeability between different things, that especially the closer you get to Disney.
So this movie covers, she's not necessarily a princess, right? But, you know, she's a Disney heroine, therefore we dub the princess. And it covers this dot, you know, I thought it was really interesting the way that it was introduced. So we're introduced to Raya and her father. Well, the prosperous, we're introduced to this land of Kumandra, where, you know, we were set up through these like shadow puppets type design of the basically the big battle that led to no more dragons being around, and how there was this formation of this dragon stone that was then shattered and divided amongst all of these different tribes in different areas. And so there's five main groups that we're introduced to: Fang, Heart, Spine, Talon, and Tail. And, you know, you say, I was getting so many different vibes during the beginning of this movie. Like, I definitely got Avatar The Last Airbender vibes, you know, where they had these different groups like Fang, Heart, Spine, you know, Earth, Wind, Water sort of thing. But then, of course, you can't deny, you know, because of the Asian theme, very much Mulan.
Oh, but it was way more than just the Asian theme. It was like, you know, those movies where it shows the how over the years during the 60s, they did a lot of rotoscoping and basically the characters were just copied and pasted and you can actually see them moving in the exact same character. Like, oh, movements, yes.
The Disney.
It kind of felt like that. The Disney, like the walk of like Baloo from one thing to another. Yes. Or what's
Snow White and Mowgli. Marion dancing is the same model, basically.
Yes, they
traced over it through Maid Marian's face on it and called it a day.
Yes, exactly. And I felt like that was exactly Mulan during her, I'm going to get ready and go and storm the, or get to the Dragonstone moment, where she's like getting all her gear on. It's like movements like that were almost exactly the same. I was like, oh gosh, this is so Mulan. And you're just like cutting and pasting this whole section in here.
Yeah, that intro was actually really interesting. So we skip ahead. Okay, so the orb has been split into all these different places and these different groups are no longer friends. They all hate each other. And
well, there's just one orb and it's just being held at her place. It doesn't break until after the girl from Talon comes in and it's oh, thank you.
Yes. Okay. So I saw that coming a mile away. You know, we are, the enemy fractions come. Hey, you know, the dad is just so doe-eyed and like optimistic about the world. Like, we're all going to be friends. And then these two are hanging out, being friends. Yeah, and Namari was her name, you know, little girl Namari and Kaya, they start a friendship and a bond. It's like, yes, we can be friends. The world is good. But, okay, then it just shocked me how incredibly easy it was for, this is the greatest thing in all the world, essentially. Like, this is holding the world together, this Dragonstone. You know, and it's in Heart, obviously, which makes sense. And just the two girls can just walk in, like, no big deal. Like, really? I have a hard time believing that there is not just dozens of guards everywhere around this place. You don't just leave.
Well, why is it just the dad and her? Yeah, that are
like
the
they're the guardians. I'm like, no.
We're just going to take the night off.
The Art of War was not read.
Amazing.
We'll move on, but that was just really unrealistic. He spends all this time training her, yet they are the only defenders of it. And then, you could just stroll on in and the girl takes it. And then, of course, it breaks and shatters and introduces the big conflict where, you know, these horrible, basically demons are just killing people and turning them to stones.
Yeah, that was one thing that bothered me through the whole thing. They didn't give a rhyme or reason as far as like why the Droon exist, what they were going after, and obviously if you have a beginning of something, you need to know that beginning of them in order to get rid of them. They just are.
They just that appeared was weird. Because of the dragons.
It's like, okay, if you watch on YouTube, you have the pitch screening? Or
yes. What is it called again? They have a series called Pitch Meetings. It is my guilty pleasure on YouTube right now. I'll include a link in the show notes. It is so funny. So funny. Basically, they're pretending to pitch various movies. And they're calling out all of the ridiculous things in the movies.
He plays himself on both sides. You have one as a screenwriter and the other one is
like the studio executive.
The producer.
Yeah.
And so the screenwriter is telling you the studio executive, like, what to expect in this movie, like, yeah, blah, blah, blah. And the executive comes back like, so why do these people exist, or why does the Druun exist? I haven't seen him do this episode on this one. So this is just me like thinking, okay, ahead, this is what you're going to end up doing. So he comes in and he's like, in my head, the studio executive is going to say, so why does this cloud exist? And the guy just comes back, clear. There needs to be a plot.
Yes.
Okay, let's move on.
Okay, move on. another common reason he says is because. And then he says, okay.
Because. Okay.
Yeah, <it's> great.
he's awesome. Like, free publicity to him because he's great.
Yes. Okay. But yes, the Druuns don't necessarily make sense. Their origins weren't necessarily, I mean, all we know is that the land is ravaged by the Druun spirits and the dragons, you know, help fight it.
And they
Something happened and the dragons couldn't fend them off. And so then five of these dragons, which you discover, you know, our powers combined, we turn into the Dragonstone, essentially.
We trust each other, and therefore we imbue our powers in this stone, which came from, like, water from one of the dragons, I guess the most powerful. And, like, that was the other thing that really bothered me, because I couldn't quite get where, like, what the rules of this world were. So, like, I just don't get it.
I think that's the problem a lot of times with the films that have, like, really great ideas. You know, I imagine this was somehow pitched, you know, there's going to be dragons, it's going to be in ancient times, and there's going to be, like, martial arts. And then they start building it out, and then there's just, you either don't have the time, or it's just not important. It just is, which is fine. You know, we don't have to dissect everything, but it just is.
they're repelled by water and trust. Like, I don't get it.
Trust.
Like, I really don't understand. Like, I understand, okay, you give them boundaries as far as water. Great, okay, I know, I can get that. But the only other thing is, like, oh, we trusted each other, Raya. That's how we were able to beat them before. Like, huh? I don't understand.
It's sort of like Harry Potter, where you're telling me no one has ever sacrificed themselves for another person and used the power of love to protect. Like, Harry was the only person who was loved enough by a parent, like, to put this love spell on him, essentially. It's not all added up, you know, but it's cool. It's okay for the story's purposes. Don't think too hard, okay?
Why did we do this? Unclear. Okay.
Yes, we're going to steal that from him.
Yes, no, we definitely do need to. I feel like that. So when you let's go back just a little bit. You're looking at the relationship between Raya and Namari. Mm-hmm. And like Namari, she turns into it. She's basically a mean girl and turns her back on her.
She's devoted to her mom and her country first and foremost, you know, so she plays the friend just to backstab her.
Right.
Which leads to trust issues.
It leads to major trust issues,
which come around later on. And she does it again.
Yeah, she does.
Where she she kills Sisu in that moment later on.
Which,
you know,
okay,
so Raya's losing people right and left due to this girl. She's
super
losing her
manipulative.
Father. And then she's losing Sisu, who becomes her, you know, her sister in a way.
Bestie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay, we're just jumping all over because I can't put this movie into. I'll start off by saying I liked the movie. I thought it was good. But it was my nephew, as I was watching it, I kind of like asked everybody, like, so how do you like it? And my 14-year-old nephew, who was just like, well, you know, it was kind of like exposition, 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 finished. And I feel like, yeah, that's really how this movie kind of felt like. It was just like, okay, we're done.
Yeah, it was felt very formulaic to me, which was a problem because everything was incredibly predictable. You know, I predicted the backstabbing early on because it just seemed too soon that they were going to come together in peace. Like, you know, they set you up perfectly. Like, here's this thing that everyone wants. All of the people who hate each other are here in the same place. It's only been the first 5 minutes, so I highly doubt things are going to go well. Most likely someone's going to break in and steal it. So, like, that happens. And then, you know, once the orb is broken up, it was like, now we got to go to Tail. Now Talon. Now Spine. Now Fang. Uh-huh. You know, there was just no...
Let's now go. Pete,
let's go. Yeah, it's... Oh, man. It was just too predictable where I, like, knew where this was going. We're going to each... You know, all these things are really prized possessions and very well guarded, but very easily to be stolen by, you know, a now, you know, 18, 20 year old girl. No big deal with her ragtag gang that she accumulates along the way.
And I get how they needed somebody from every group, mm-hmm. from every one of these countries to be able to come together and trust one another once again.
Ooh, trust meter. Tell us in the comments how many times we say trust today.
The trust meter comes on right there. And I understood that formula of how they're trying to, like, bring everybody back together. I just still don't understand a lot of the things. Like, she says that she's been for 6 years going through and trying to find this, you know, the end of all of, because, you know, Namari says, hey, there's this last dragon, her spirit is, she has a scroll that says, okay, that at the end of one of the rivers, there is the spirit of the last dragon. And mm-hmm. so you can go and find Sisu at one of these places. And wouldn't it be so great, because we're both such big dragon nerds, to be able to go and find Sisu. And so Raya makes it her mission. She ends up, you know, they broke the stone and took it. And so she takes the scroll and ends up going to find Sisu, spent 6 years chasing the end of every river. That was the other weird thing. It was like, okay, what exactly brought Sisu back? Like, well, was it just the fact that
Before you even get to this,
okay,
you're telling me in 500 years since this was broken, and this legend has happened where the last dragon was at the end of all of these little river tributaries and breakoffs, but there's so many, it takes so long. In 500 years, there wasn't one. In 500 years, there wasn't one other person, or maybe a handful of people, who were really dedicated, hardcore super fans of dragons that also went to the end of every single river to find her.
It's exactly like Onward, where they're just like, oh, it's just a game now. No one actually believes it.
You're right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. But anyways, going back to Sisu.
I had to watch this like twice because I was like, okay, how in the world does she actually get this to work? So she takes the water, she puts the dragon like pendant on top of it. Like, is the pendant magical? Is the pendant the thing that brings it back?
Yeah, and if so, could be Talon, like, she could get it at their equivalent of Claire's. Like, it doesn't seem to be anything special that.
It didn't seem like it was anything special, and they didn't establish it as being anything special.
This is something I had and I gave it to you. Now you have it.
Right. Yeah. So now she comes here, she puts water in like a bowl or whatever, puts the pendant on top, and then she just is like starts praying to Sisu or the spirit of Sisu, and then Sisu just like comes back. Mm-hmm. Like the whole thing, like has a lot of religious undertones, but not of any specific religion. It is like a religion in their own making that they don't actually explain.
They have these rituals that are important and established, but not important enough to really, we don't want to touch religion, so they're not going to go into it, but we're just going to touch on it, but not touch
we're
it,
just gonna
if you know what I mean.
Show it without telling you, and so you get it. And I was... watching it, it kind of reminded me of an interview I listened to with Orson Scott Card, who is an author, and he wrote Ender's Game. Anyway, so he's talked about how in all of his books, he tries to add a religious background to each person, whether that be, you know, an actual religion or whether that be a non-religion, because non-religion has its own baked in traditions as well. Mm-hmm. So if you are, every outlook comes with a standard set of a worldview. And so when you are creating a book, you kind of want to, whether you explain that to the audience or not, you as the author know that that's what your character's worldview is, and that's what guides them. And so in this, you can obviously see they all have these motions that they put their hands in this like circle form and pull it up to their head. And this is kind of like their bow. Uh-huh. This is how they like kind of show reverence to certain things.
Deity.
Yes. And so it's kind of like, I wish I would have known a little bit more about that connection I felt like it would have added a little bit more to it. They were obviously going for time and so didn't want to.
Yeah.
Put that in there. But I feel like if you're just going to be doing it on streaming, it doesn't really matter how long it is. You know, call out to the, you know, Snyder Cut, 4 hours long. So yeah, that's what I was kind of worrying. That's what I was just like wondering about. Like, what is this background thing that I feel like would explain this moment where she's kind of praying to Sisu, but we're trying to bring Sisu back, and then Sisu just appears, and it just apparently it's not a deity. It just happens to be like this. You broke some code, you hit the correct number of buttons on your controller, and now Sisu appears. I don't know.
Yeah,
you
I
tell
think,
me.
I think one way that they could have fixed it is tying it to the Dragonstone. Whereas, you know, where I say, okay, in 500 years, no one was able to get to the right river. Like, it was just her. She figured it out, and then she didn't have to do anything special other than build this little thing. Well, it would have maybe packed a little bit more of a punch as if in this legend to find her, you had to have the stone or part of the stone. That gives even more a reason to get this stone, and it makes it that much harder for her to even come back, because the odds of someone actually having their hands on this is incredibly slim.
So it's also like a ruby red slippers, the magic is with you. You had the power all along kind of thing.
No, I'm saying that you need the power.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, but she had the stone. She had a part of the stone, or her plan. Yes. Had the stone for 500 years. So it's like they could have brought him back at any point.
Oh, yeah, totally. I don't know. Interesting. So we are finally to the second half of the title. So we've talked at length about Raya. Now let's talk about The Last Dragon. You know, this name of this is really, it's a good name. Raya and the Last Dragon, I think, is a little bit more tantalizing than naming it just Raya, you know, versus the Moana sort of thing. So I really like the title of this because there's a little bit of intrigue. The Last Dragon. What's that about? Who is the Last Dragon? You know, why is there only a Last Dragon? And yes, that is all in the first half hour. We discover all of this, but I thought it was a fantastic title. So we are introduced to Awkwafina's character, Sisu. So what did you think about her?
I really like Awkwafina just on her own. Uh-huh. I just think she's got a good vibe. Like she has a good... I like her voice. It's like she's got a good, very distinct voice. And so I think she does great as a voice actor in this case.
Was it just me, or did Sisu kind of look like her? Like, did her face have some of her?
Probably did.
You know how some characters, they'll actually look at the footage of the actor, like performing the lines. And there's like two ways that they go with this, where they have their own, you know, visual representation of the character, how they talk, how they move their mouth. And that's totally unique and different and apart from the character. And then sometimes they'll actually take the screen, the actor, and model kind of the movements of the actor on the character. And I really felt like I was looking at a dragon version of her. Maybe it's just because she does such a great job.
I'm sure they did that. I mean, they either look at footage of the actor or they look at footage of themselves doing that.
Yes, that's true.
So,
so if you're a really good animator and you're getting all the top gigs, your face is on every lead character. Actually, not really, because that's not really how it works anymore. You basically get right, a scene, no. But
yeah. But there's still people who do that. Right. Like, as far as, like, this is my scene. So, for example, I'm thinking of specifically in the making of Frozen 2, where the one animator, she goes and she's, like, skateboarding or something in order to, like, do oh, yeah. a specific, or somebody's skateboarding, and to do a very specific scene where she's running off to the edge of the cliff and, like, oh, you know, almost to the Little Mermaid kind of, like, reach for something that's never going to be mine kind of thing. so anyway, so then yeah, it happens. But yeah, for Sisu, I didn't notice that specifically. I thought it was a cute dragon. That's nice. All I got out of that.
Yeah, and she's really goofy. You know, you'd think that this character, I don't know, we've had a lot of sidekick characters in the past. So, you know, you think of Mushu, you know, if we're talking about Mulan and the comparisons there, mm-hmm. we have Mushu, and he's funny, but he's not necessarily super, super goofy. And we have Genie, who's not goofy. He's just really out there, you know, yeah. because he's omnipresent. He knows all these things. He's just like constantly going. I don't know. So she was great. You know, it was great to see this female sidekick character, if you will. She wasn't necessarily a sidekick as in, like, she was at equal footing with Raya, I felt. She was just as important. She wasn't just here for comedic relief or just to, you know, sell toys for the kids. She was an actual player, which is why she got, you know, the title treatment, you know, Raya and the Last Dragon.
So now we have Raya and we have Sisu, and they're like, hey, deciding that they have a goal to go and get all of the pieces back. Mm-hmm. Yeah, get all the pieces back from everything. So I do want to point out that at this point, you're also bringing back in Namari plus all of her crew, and they're all traveling on giant cats, and they are the cat claw. Like, they really like claws, so they're with cats. And it just reminded, there's a little bit further on, like toward the end, you meet her going back to where her mom is teaching all the little ones. She's like, okay, my kittens, come back later. And I was like, I wonder if this was done like pre or post Tiger King, because I really wanted them to be like, all right, my cats and kittens, get out there.
All right, my cool cats and kittens. Oh, that's
hilarious. But I had a question for you. Okay. You've got Cook, or what is it? His name is Tuk, who is voiced by Alan Tudyk, yes. Which he's the gift that keeps on giving. That's what a degree from Juilliard will get you. You are now the guy who does all of the random animal sidekicks in Disney.
Yes.
But would you rather be riding along on a tuk-tuk or one of the cats from Namari's clan?
Well, I mean, as far as smooth ride, the tuk-tuk, tuk-tuk's that little, like, spinny thing?
Is the roly-poly?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a nice smooth ride right there. I'd be interested to see how they created a saddle that kind of suspends on top of that thing instead of rolling with it. But, you know, that's for another day. They've mastered different forms of physics that we don't have at this point in time, which is cool. But, you know, for a coolness factor, definitely the cats.
I agree. I don't think I could pass up riding along on a giant tiger. So,
yeah. You know, speaking of that scene, I really thought that one of the best scenes in the movie visually was that very first scene where she's just, you know, time has progressed. She has the hat on and the cape, and then she's riding on the tuk-tuk, and it's just dusty, and she's passing all of the stones of the different people. So you can see it just visually tells a lot about what has happened over the past few years. We see that she's aged mm-hmm. up. We see that more and more people are turning to stone. It's just a wild, wild west out there. And it was just a really, really cool scene. That was probably my favorite visually in the entire film.
I felt like all the visuals in this were quite up to par on as far as compared to any other film. So I was very impressed with what mm-hmm. they did, how they did all that. And as you're going along, I don't even know where to go with all these, because I have all the, like, two boxes of, you know, comments. One box of like, okay, we could go like, you know, point by point, or we could just talk about the things that I really just didn't understand. And one of the things that I really don't understand is one is why everybody ends up like they're holding like a bowl with their hands when they turn to stone.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't understand why everybody ends up looking like that. And then also I don't, I feel like, is this whole thing going to end up like the blip in the Avengers where after 5 years, 6 years in this case, now everybody comes back and they don't know what to do with everyone because there's quite a bit more people have aged along. Like it's been 6 years. So you've had an increase in population of the people that stayed behind, but then you also have people that now are coming back after, you know, no longer being stoned. So it's just a very, very interesting moment.
I don't think there's enough time to talk about population control and all that entails in this podcast, but you know, maybe for a nerdy couch about discussion.
Control. I'm right. Just about population, like, analysts.
analysis. Yeah, I can't. I got nothing for you, Chelsea.
Okay. Those are just the questions. Where would you like to go with this conversation,
I mean,
Morgan?
Yeah, if it comes up, bring it up. But it's just, you know, we meet these different groups of people along the way. We have the little boy, you know, and the thing is, like, I even being a few weeks removed from having watched the film, like, it's hard to remember people's names at this point in time.
Yeah.
There's just like, oh, the boy on the boat, and then the little girl without parents, and then the guy who lost all his family and lost his baby. And then, yeah, so it's just a ragtag gang that she musters up, and we're going to save China sort of thing. Very predictable. As I was watching it, I was like kind of looking at my watch like, okay, we can't spend very much time here. We're like basically we're in and we're out sort of thing. It's not ever difficult for them to obtain these stones, to find out where they're hidden, where they are. Usually within a few minutes of reaching that place, we know where it is and we're figuring out how to get it. I mean, they did mix it up in the variety. You know, one, they had to, you know, I really liked the switcheroo with in Talon when they were there, how there's kind of the switcheroo with who the real leader is. You think it's the one guy and it's actually the old lady. Thought she was funny. So let's yada, yada, yada. They get the gems at all of these different pieces and, you know, they have to go to Fang to get theirs. And then they meet good old Namari. She keeps showing up all of these different places. You know, there was at the previous place where they were holding off that gate, and Namari sees Sisu right before they leave.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, she being this dragon super fan girl, she's kind of like, it's a moment where you're like, oh, is she going to turn? Is she now, it's, you know, she's had faith in this thing the whole time and she finally sees it. So now is she going to go and follow it? You know, very biblical reference sort of there.
Right.
And so we're hoping that by the next time they encounter her, because that's not the last you've seen of me, that she's going to join them. And she does, kind of, but not really. And then double crosses them again, but this time with a double cross with a crossbow.
This is another thing I didn't like about Namari, is how later on, after this moment, she comes back and somehow blames the whole death of Sisu on Raya again, saying, you didn't trust Sisu. I was going to change and you didn't trust her. Therefore, it's your fault. Again, like, her death is as much your fault as it is mine. Like, what? How dare you? I was mad at that. Like, you are,
exactly
what you said.
Gaslighting.
Yes. That's called manipulation. Like, you got issues, girlfriend.
Yeah, with trust, for sure. So you kind of are wondering, wow, this girl is no good. She cannot be redeemed. But in the end, you know, some people just need a few tries to let their inner goodness come out. And at the very end, you know, she does, when all Droon breaks loose, you know, she actually, you know, gives up and returns and she actually turns and fights with them and even, you know, goes to the end with Raya, which is pretty cool. And Raya turns to stone, which is not what you expect. You think she's going to be the big savior. She's going to be the one to save the day. The movie is named after her, after all. And so when she turns to stone, it's kind of like, oh, what?
Yeah. I mean, they're trying to show that it's okay. It was Raya's chance to be the bigger person. And I do appreciate that message that went through. It's like, even though you know that these people have double crossed you multiple times, you're still going to be the bigger person. You're still going to be the one to move forward and to put trust in others. Like, yes. I get that that's what they're trying to, the message that they're trying to convey. I still don't know how it necessarily connects to the Droon, how the Droon are aware of trust issues or not. I just don't know. But the message in and of itself is a good one. Being able to look past wrongs and move forward in as though this is the, like when you look at people and you treat them the way you project you would want to be treated.
Mm-hmm.
Like you project on them the goodness that you would want to see. And I think that that's a very good quality as well. You know, always, no matter what the person ever does, to act as opposed to react to how somebody acts toward you.
Yes.
Anyway, I feel like that's what they're kind of going for. So I'll accept that and say good job. Like, as far as messages go, that's a good message.
Yeah, it went along with the message. The message was all about trust throughout. And instead of her being the one to save the day, she has to trust someone who has backstabbed her multiple times and has no reason to be one that you put trust in. It's her only hope, and she does it. She gives up everything that she has, her life, to trust someone who just is untrustworthy. And it works out in the end. The gemstone is put back together, and even Namari turns into stone. But since everything had been united before that moment, so she combines the stone at the nick of time. So even though she turns to stone, everything starts reversing, and everyone is now back to normal. No more stone people. And it really is kind of interesting. You briefly talked about this, but how bizarre and strange would it be where some people in your life, you know, if you turned to stone, you were it stone for 6 years or 3 years or however many years, you know, it ended up being. Other people in your life continue to age and progress, and now you're the same age. Very, very, not the same age, sorry. I mean, I guess if you had a 6-year-old and a 12-year-old, right, that would solve that. That would be bizarre. But even for her father, you know, she's no longer just this cute little preteen anymore. She's a young woman.
Yeah, she's like a you know, probably, like you said, a 20-year-old at least. Well, nah, maybe not. She seemed more like she was like
14 and then she was 20.
Okay. Yeah, okay. We'll go with that. 20 is apparently the new 16 for Disney. So all in all, like, what were your thoughts about the full story? Like, it's been some time. How did you feel?
It has been a few weeks. There has been some time. And even just initially afterwards, I was like, this is a good movie. I liked it. But it was just very generic in a way, just very formulaic with the plot. We got to collect the pieces. How many times have we seen that before in various iterations? And I, you know, we haven't talked about Sisu enough, but she really is just the bright star of this show. Without Sisu, and Raya is great because Raya is not necessarily, she's just kind of a normal girl. She's not wacky. She's not crazy. She's not super funny. She's just really determined to make this happen. And she's a normal person who can save the world, which is great, you know, that she doesn't necessarily have all these superpowers. But pairing her with Sisu is nice because Sisu is not only just otherworldly and magical, and she's hilarious at the same time. And I really think that kind of carried on Robin Williams' legacy in a way as far as these comical sidekick sort of characters. But she did it with the female perspective, where we don't see a lot of female side characters, if at all. They're always male.
Yeah.
And so I really just appreciated that, you know, this was just like two super strong women, one in dragon form and one in human form. And then we also have Namari, who we didn't even talk about her character design. So beautiful, so strong, so tough. Love her haircut. Like, she just embodies, like, I'm a bad A.
You know, one joke that I thought was funny, not a joke, but one thing that I thought was funny is how she had that haircut. Like, apparently it was her mom's haircut. She had it as a young girl. And then later on, they still both have that haircut. And I'm like, well, that is a haircut that you kind of have to commit to. So the fact that 6 years later, you still have it, you know, it's like, I've definitely had the same haircut over a 6 year period of time. So I get that. But also it's like, that one's hard to not commit to.
Not really, though, because their hair's so short, you know. Yeah. When I see the girls who have that haircut, but they have long hair and then half of it shaved off, I'm like, wow, if you ever wanted to not have this haircut again and just, yeah, that's going to take a long time for your hair to grow back. You know, when your hair's to your chin, it's like, okay, give me a year and my hair will be back. But
yeah.
Yeah, you gotta commit.
It's a commitment. All right, this is what we got. You know, going back also what you're talking about, Sisu, one aspect of her character in the whole formula, I guess, of how you brought everything back together is, you know, at the beginning, everybody said, oh, the great and mighty Sisu, oh, she is the one and the only. And when she comes back, she's just like this, like probably the lowest on the totem pole as far as the dragons go. Her magic power is that she can swim really, really well.
Which, that was a funny payoff when she was like talking about it. And
yeah,
you know, they're like, okay, yeah, great. And then it actually came. Yeah, it was actually super helpful.
Super helpful. Yeah. But in comparison to all the others, I do think that the swimming thing is a lot better than the mystical glow. Like, like she glows. Cool.
Right.
The shapeshifter, that would be probably the most convenient of the mm-hmm. powers. And then the rain one, also cool. I feel like they all have the ability to run on air, though.
Yeah.
Am I wrong in that assumption?
No, that's definitely, doesn't matter who you are, that's part of your dragonness.
Yeah. So, I mean, I liked the payoff with that, you know, like she's like, who was I? I was nobody. They were the ones that just put all their trust in me. And therefore, I ended up being the one, you know, in the group project that still got the, you know, that turned it in. So I got credit. Mm-hmm. I did like that, you know, put everybody in their own perspective of, you know, feeling like they are not the end all. And so they're all trying to kind of make up for what other people have entrusted to them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I liked that. I thought it was interesting later on when it's like, oh, plus all of the dragons are back, not just the last five that she was with. So it's like, there's a really big population increase at this moment. Like, not just all of the people, but like all the dragons are back.
Well, the dragons just float around and fly, so they're not going to take up too much real estate, so.
Yeah, that's true. They're on a different plane, obviously.
Literally. talking about the voice cast, you know, very commendable that they had a nearly all Asian voice cast for this. I mean, obviously, this is a fictional land, but it's heavily inspired by Southeast Asia. And Awkwafina, who we talked about, she's just amazing. I love her. And for Raya, it's Kelly Marie Tran. And other people that I recognize, you know, Daniel Dae Kim, he's from Lost. He played Raya's father.
Everybody loves Sandra Oh.
Sandra Oh, who, how could you not? Of course, that she plays Namari's mother, hardcore.
Right.
And just loved it. And then Gemma Chan, she played Namari. I wasn't really familiar with her, but I thought she did a great job as Namari. And, you know, they were talking about, I was reading kind of an article saying, it was just interesting. Kelly Marie Tran was talking about how she's totally up for a sequel and she'd love to do the voice. And I'm just like, but who's not up for a sequel? Like, if this is your gig where you're an artist and you're a voice actor or you're an actor, like, of course, like, please make as many of these. Sign me up, you know, unless you're.
Yes,
there's
exactly.
Very few instances where people are like, no, I don't want a sequel. I'm not interested in more work.
I don't want a job. It's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Literally the only non-Asian on the main Alan. List is Alan Tudyk.
Played the animals.
Good for him. He loves that job. You know, I would be totally
don't
fine with having
the hand that feeds you.
Like, I'll take it.
Thoughts? Anything that stands out to you about Raya and the Last Dragon?
So as far as like, if I were to give this a rating, I'm going to give it like a 3.5 stars out of five, mostly because I think it was a really solid movie, but I felt like it was pretty, as we've talked about, predictable and also forgettable. It's been a couple weeks, like yourself. I had to go in and rewatch it last night because I was like, I think I've forgotten all of it except for like two things. And so just in that, it means that it didn't really stick in my head the way I wanted it, like a 5-star movie would stick in my head. So just based on that, that's where I leave it. I enjoyed it though. It was good time, good solid family flick. So yeah, that's where I'm at with this.
Yeah, likewise, I'm going to give it. I'm debating between 3.5 stars. 3.5 stars. It was good, and it was a good time, and I was happy to be back in the theater watching it. But like you said, it's just kind of generic and a little bit forgettable. You know, when I compare to other Disney films, because I'm just a huge Disney fan and Disney animation, you know, is everything to me. And there's something really special about Disney animation. And this just didn't feel special. And I know people have made those comparisons about Pixar and some of the more recent Pixar films is like, oh, Pixar is losing its spark, is losing its edge, whatever. But this just didn't feel like it had that Disney panache or that pizzang. Like, I'm making up words that start with P's here, but it just didn't have that Disney X factor that really makes Disney films special. Like, it felt like maybe any studio could have produced this. Definitely the lack of songs. I understand why they didn't want to do it. Not every single film has to have songs. I get it, but and this, I don't know, it was a little bit more serious of a film, which I appreciated. I'm not saying like, oh, it needed songs, but it compared to, for Disney standouts, you know, in my mind, they typically have songs.
Well, yeah. For me, if you're going to ask me songs or no songs, I'm always songs. So right. Just on a standard, always songs.
So, you know, for that reason, it's just kind of a bit of a letdown, I guess. It was good, but a letdown, if that makes sense. And I think that's just because I have such a high view of Disney films in my mind. I think of really great classics, ones that really just I want to go back and watch again and again. Beauty and the Beast, Frozen, Tangled, Aladdin. They all just, there's just something special about them. And maybe that's for a future nerdy couch discussion. Like, what is the Disney X factor that, or what makes a film that you want to go back and watch? But this one, I mean, I don't need to go back and see it anytime soon.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I watched it again for this purpose of talking to you today. But outside of that, I don't think there was anything that would have said, I really want to go and watch this again. And I like going back to your question. I don't know what it is. That is the Disney X factor, you know, especially of those.
You're not supposed to answer it, Chelsea. That's the nerdy couch discussion.
But that's what I'm saying. For the nerdy couch discussion, we're going to have to really go deep. We're going to have to go deep and analyze, like, okay, like, all of, like, go through and realize, okay, what are all of our top five, you know, 5-star films? And what was it about those films that really made it the X factor?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's how we'll do it.
But anyway, sure to subscribe. So we asked our patrons in our exclusive patron-only Facebook group called Roto Nation. We asked, who is your favorite character in Raya and the Last Dragon and why? And Sol responded, she said, none of them were developed, but if I had to pick one, I would say the dad and the little kid. So you know, that really goes to tell you how much people are remembering these characters when we don't know who's who. We're just calling them the dad and the kid.
Yes.
And she said, the whole movie felt like a TV season squished into a movie. I felt Raya had no personality and she was a super bad A girl. But as far as personality, she didn't have anything like Rapunzel, Anna, Moana. I totally agree. She was pretty bland. This is my job. This is what I want to do. I'm going to go. Got to save my dad. Got to go get the stone. It's a shame. Sisu, she took everything in the personality department. That's for sure.
I agree.
Which I'm surprised. I'm surprised Sol didn't say, you know, Raya was her favorite character. But I guess she didn't love Raya compared to the dad. The dad was great and very endearing and loving and fatherly.
He was. Yeah. Yeah, Sisu, the little, yeah, I agree completely with Sol. Like the little kid, he was probably the best, and his story as far as like he's a little entrepreneur and he's just like going and going to do all these things. I'm like, mad respect, kid. I like it. Actually, I liked all of the ragtag gang, because you also had the big doofus, not doofus, but the big gruff guy who reminded me of, he reminded me of the Entangled, one of the Snuggly Duckling like people.
Mm-hmm.
And I just liked those guys. So that's why I liked him.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us for this episode of the Animation Addicts Podcast. Our next movie is going to be Pixar's Soul. So be sure to send us your voicemails for that so you can give us your voicemail reviews. We're excited to do that one. You can send the voicemails at rotoscopers.com/voicemails or give us a call at 406-646-6575. We're excited to be back. Thank you so much to the patrons for their support. If you would like to become a patron, so that way you can not only get us on a weekly basis, but we can start giving you episodes twice a week. Then we would love it if you would support the show at rotoscopers.com/patron. That, my friends, was our take on Raya and the Last Dragon. And until next time, we are Rotoscopers. Yeah, so I bought this Amazon boom mic stand, I guess. This, you know, the arm that you can move around and look all fancy, like all of the streamers
like
do
that.
And all the, yes.
Because you want to be like the big YouTube streamers. You're like, woo, I'm cool.
Except for it was $7. And for $7, it's a piece of crap. Now I understand why it was $7. Like, it does the job. It's just so cheaply made. So I can't really complain. Oh, baby's here. His thing came out. His pacifier. But so I can't really complain, but at the same time, it's, I understand why it was $7. And I asked someone else, you know, just she has a podcast and whatnot. And I looked up hers. Hers is like $150. I'm like, I'm sure that does the job too. So I'll stick with my $7 boom mic stand for now. But hopefully I will not be bumping into it like I used to. Oh, I just bumped into it. Dang it.
Oh, that's amazing.
Oh, man. But yeah, before it would like bump against the table and kind of create problems.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because you would edit it, but I'm hoping that's not the case anymore.
So as a side note, we've gotten a couple people ask us about our podcasting situation. Shall we disclose that for the, you know, people who stuck around?
Why don't we do this for a nerdy couch discussion episode?
Okay.
I think they're going to be more like personality based ones where we can just like shoot the breeze. Not necessarily, but we'll have like a topic.
Okay.
And I think let's just save that. We'll save this conversation for one of those.
Okay.
So let's do Raya, and then we can do like a mini one of like how we got started, how to get started doing podcasting, like just be like a bonus.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Okay, cool.
Right. I mean, they couldn't do Raya and Sisu. It's like, I mean,
who's that? What's that mean?
I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah.
But yeah, the last, it worked out for them.
Pause. The baby's kind of falling asleep. So I'm going to move him to the closet.
Okay.
One second. Okay, I'm back. Welcome it wasn't back. A closet under the stairs. It was just a closet. An upgrade. A walking
closet.
Closet
on the stairs. Oh, I guess so. Technically, the closet under the stairs was a walk-in closet as well. So
that's true. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. You've been listening to the Animation Addicts podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you want to help spread the word, be sure to share the podcast with your friends on social media. Just don't forget to tag us at Rotoscopers on Instagram and use the hashtag AnimationAddicts. For all the links and full show notes for this episode, go to rotoscopers.com/podcast. Now, if you still can't get enough for your animation fix, be sure to subscribe to us on YouTube and visit rotoscopers.com for more animation news, reviews, and interviews. Thanks for listening.